WBTV's Good Question is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. Listen to your city at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
In the past year, we've dealt with labor shortages in several different sectors. The restaurant industry, hospitality, trucking. Now, a lifeguard shortage. Why now, and what are communities doing to fill positions? We're asking a member of the American Lifeguard Association.
Right now, we should have already had all our guards trained and ready to go, but we're just now starting training some areas because of the relaxing of the COVID restrictions.
This is WBTV's Good Question. Welcome to WBTV's Good Question. Alex Giles here with WBTV producer Jack Vandertal. We are talking to Wyatt Wernith, American Lifeguard Association national spokesperson. I'd be lying if I said I had heard of the American Lifeguard Association before yesterday. Tell me what you guys do. What is the association?
Well, American Lifeguard Association has been around over 30 years. We have a mission, if you will, like any good company, not-for-profit kind of thing, is we want to spread the word about beach, ocean, water safety. We also have a department that will certify lifeguards for the jobs that they are looking for and gives them an exposure online to getting a job. Then when they go to get the job, of course, they already have some pre-knowledge of it with our certification. And of course, most agencies like my agency in Brevard County, we test them and run them through our training just as well. But they're excellent pupils because they already have an understanding. And the American Lifeguard is, you know, paramount in actually making a difference in the water safety community by spreading the message, education, awareness, and obviously certifications.
So are there a lot of lifeguards in the United States that are members of the American Lifeguard Association?
We have quite a few members or certified lifeguards for sure. I can't give you that number exactly. That would have to be directed to that department. I'm the spokesperson covering the education side of awareness. But we do have a lot of lifeguards. I've run into them all over the country in my travels, and they recognize me from what I do, and it's amazing.
I was going to say, what do you do with the association in that role of spokesperson?
Well, I go on, all types of media, whether it's I'm in print and magazines. I've been to New York to the USA Today. I do weather channels, stuff like this, local channels. Primarily through the month of, May is Water Safety Week or month. And this is Beach Safety Week. Each week of May has a week, boating safety, learning to swim and beach safety, things like that. So I kind of bring awareness to that for American Lifeguard, who kind of puts us out there. And like I said, we kind of lead the way when it comes to putting the message out there.
I have always wondered this, Wyatt. How is it determined which beaches, lakes, pools, etc., require lifeguards? Is that a government mandate thing at the local government level?
Yes, it's more on the local government level. A lot of it deals with, what their budget is. A lot of it deals with how many drownings or patrons they have to the beach areas and the beach environment. And it also has a lot to do with tourism, obviously, that brings the patrons to the beach. So like here in Brevard County, I can only speak on this from my experience. We have 72 miles of oceanfront. We have 210 beach accesses. Throughout the years, the most lifeguards we've had in coverage is 25 of those 210 because they have shown the locations that we selected a lot of activity where the ones that are, 200 downrange or in secluded areas, behind homes, there's not a lot of parking or no parking. People have to walk through or get into the dunes. So it's really based on that demographics of that agency when it comes to the ocean side. The pool sides, it's a different world over there, depending again on budget, as well as demographics and how that pool is established. For an example, our local Cocoa Beach pool is for profit. It's a community driven, so it's based off the money. It's not a lot. It doesn't cost a lot to go in there, but it does have some value to help cover the, the expenses of keeping it open. So it's a community pool. And if you go to like a water park somewhere, they're, higher you have to pay a higher fee to get in and to cover their expenses and their for-profit. So there's a lot of variations that are causing the lifeguards to be where they need to be. And most importantly is every one of these entities are really overly concerned or primarily concerned with safety of the person visiting.
And Wyatt, so we're starting to trickle closer to summer now. At least here in the Carolina area, we've started to hear murmurings of how there aren't enough lifeguards to safely accommodate the guests, whether it be at local pools or local lakes. And we're looking to see if obviously this isn't just a local issue, but also a national issue. Why is it that you believe there could be a shortage of lifeguards right now?
Well, you know, to start out with, getting lifeguards, professional lifeguards, well-trained lifeguards, qualified lifeguards, any of these entities, be it parks, pools, open water, ocean, it's a very rigorous training that's required. They have to be very physical. They have to be very alert. They have to be very dedicated and willing to take that responsibility of having someone's lives in their hands. That's a lot to chew on. So with that, it's always been a very elite group. You know, we're real tight. I know I can run into a lifeguard somewhere around America and we can have common ground and act like we've been long lost friends or the world, really, in that matter. But what's happened to us recently is the pandemic has hit and our training is up close and personal. So it's not something you can do, you know, over a Zoom or a Skype or something like that. So we've had to stop it, put an end to that up close training. So we haven't been able to train or start training when we normally would. Then you have something that happened to us a while back. We have a thing called the J-1 foreign exchange work visa. And believe it or not, we were getting a lot of people from Russia. So then you got the war and that's impacting, those people aren't coming in. We're not getting that group of people that would come in for the summer and fill the ranks, as well as we had to stop training. Right now, we should have already had all our guards trained and ready to go, but we're just now starting training some areas because of the relaxing of the COVID restrictions. So it's been a challenge, but you know, the most important thing is we're first responders, public safety. We adapt and overcome, and we want to make sure that we direct people to the areas that have lifeguards, and we want to make sure that we protect the public the best as the way that we can. And that is, if we have to close some areas and divert them to somewhere else, that's what we have to do.
I know you mentioned a number of factors there. Do you think that's kind of the same across the board for different lifeguard positions, whether you're talking about, you know, a very popular beach down there in Florida or, you know, a community pool here in North Carolina? Do you think that's still the same issue, the training backlog and some of the pandemic backlog that's leading to some of these? Or in some cases, do you think that there are just folks who don't want to do the job?
Well, yes, to your question on both in a way is, the pandemic and all this stuff is a nationwide. I can't speak for outside the U.S., but, you know, you do have, when you're offering a nice, easy job at some restaurant or something, and versus coming out here and going through, depending on what the agency requires in training, like a couple of weeks of physical running around, you know, going into the water, almost drowning, having to be a strong swimmer, you know, doing trauma, doing all the things that are required and having that responsibility. Yes, it does deter a few people, but that's kind of always been a norm. There are actually some agencies out there that are trying to, you know, to offer a bonus for signing on, upping the ante as far as pay goes to try and get people to come. And still that we see a little bit of hesitancy there because, again, it's such a very elite, job. Once you become a lifeguard, it's also a pride thing. You know, you every time I go to the water, anywhere I'm at in the world, parks, mountains, everything, I'm watching the water. So it becomes kind of a lifestyle. And the ones that, you know, do get into it are in it for life. We just need more of them.
Why do you think, from your experience, what are some towns, communities, and beaches doing in attempt to fill these positions? Are they having to go to the extra mile in order to find those elite young men and women? Or just tell me a little bit about that.
Well, there's all kinds of strategies, and there's probably some things I'm not even aware of. But the stuff that, like, we would do is we would go to the local swim teams and things like that and try to get people that we know could swim and invite them. Another thing is we're going back to retired personnel that were former lifeguards or even strong athletic types that are retired and whatever they did, we come out and you know, we're filling in holes where we can. We're finding the people that are willing to do it, but we have to go look for them in some cases. Like I said, they offer sign-on bonuses. You know, they increase the pay a little bit. You know, it's really, when I came out and became a lifeguard, there wasn't a lot of convincing to be done. I mean, you have the best office in the world. So, I mean, that speaks for itself, and that's the first thing that shines when people think about lifeguarding. So we just got to keep out there recruiting, if you will, and getting creative and trying to get qualified personnel that'll come out and see how wonderful this job is as we do.
I know that's a popular spot down there in Cocoa Beach where you are. Have you guys had even, you know, lifeguard shortages and struggles down there, or have you still had high demand for the jobs?
Well, like I said, even when I first started lifeguarding, we had challenges. You know, one of the things is like we would have, high school or college kids that would come in. And then around that time, even though we're still populated, they would have to return back to school, or the college kids would get out even earlier because they'd have to go scout their colleges. So we would always have to fill in those gaps. And that hasn't changed yet. We're experiencing that right now here in Brevard County Beach, up and down the coast, all the pools, the parks and everything. So it's, you know, I guess what, if there's a shining side of everything, is it something, it's nothing new for us because we've experienced it. It's just a little more impactful because of the pandemic and maybe the J-1 visas, but we're still adapting and working around that. And we're still out here watching the water and hoping that everyone comes and has a safe day at the beach and the parks and the pools.
How long have you been a lifeguard, Wyatt?
I've been over 30 something odd years. I've been involved in this. Wow. Like I said, once, you know, I like to tell people this, there's an interesting fact that there's something that I would observe. When I would have my academies and I'd have my lifeguards come out, I would have two things would happen to a lifeguard. They come out, they're having a great day, and then all of a sudden somebody drowns or they have to go into action. One is that person says, you know what? This is not for me. This is just too much. It's dramatic. It breaks their heart. They can't handle it. And they go away and never come back. But then we have the ones like what I was. We have an incident. We are determined to not ever let that happen to us again. So we learn and we train and we do everything possible so that we don't ever have to pull someone out of the water. We actually go preventative. And that's really the main game of a lifeguard, is I'll sit here and watch the water and I'll go and get you before you know you're in trouble. Because when in doubt, I go out. If I think that person might get into harm's way, I will go get them. They don't even know. I'll say, hey, please get out. You're in a rip current, move over this way. And that is really the kind of, you know, gold star for lifeguarding, is that we are preventative. So what I was trying to say is that, yeah, you know, lifeguard, people come out and they lifeguard for a season. They see something that really disturbs them. They don't come back, or you're a lifeguard forever.
You mentioned, obviously, you know, 30 years, and you mentioned having the greatest office in the world. And, you know, we know there have even been shows about lifeguards with Baywatch. Do you think the popularity for the position is still there today?
You know, we had a lot invested, if you will. I did a lot of stuff with the recent movie Baywatch, but I'll back up a little bit. The original Baywatch, we used to have Baywatch watching parties. You know, we'd all get together and watch and kind of pick it. You know, we'd pick at some of the things they were doing right, some of the things they were doing wrong, and then daydream about the great stuff about it. And we would try, you know, it was amazing. So then, you know, we had a big gap between the periods of the original television series into the movie. And we did see, you know, the movie was, I think, a boost. It got people excited again. And we kind of look at it as a badge of honor that, you know, that it was, they filmed it out in Florida. They filmed some of it in Savannah, believe it or not, out on the beaches. So they filmed it out in lifeguarded areas. And it was really exciting. It's just, we need to keep that stoke, I like to call it, going and have some more. I'd love to see some more.
And Wyatt, you know, obviously past the glam of popular culture, it's very serious and it's very real what you all do and the task that it requires. It seems like connecting the dots, if there are less lifeguards, it seems there is an increased chance that people who decide to go out for a swim run that risk of, it seems like we could have more, the risk of running more, having more drownings and more people being put in dangerous situations because of this. Do you have anything to speak on that?
Well, it is something that we look at, like a risk assessment. You know, we have to look at, you know, somebody said something very smart the other day. It was something along the lines of, you know, we can't prevent it from happening, but we're going to do everything in our power to manage it from not happening. Mm-hmm. And that's all that we can hope for. It's a risk assessment right now, because, you know, everything we do is based on statistics. And then we have to look at that, you know, in the following, the coming years, on what we're dealing with here. And again, like anything else, we learn and evolve from that. But at the moment, like I said, we're just managing it and trying to keep it down. And that's the best thing that we can do.
I was just going to ask, what is your level of concern with the shortage and the need for workers?
I'm always concerned about it. In fact, where I'm standing right now, my nearest lifeguard tower is over a mile something that way and 20 something miles that direction. And we have people out here on the beach. When I come to the beach to enjoy myself, I'm constantly, my wife gets on to me because I'm constantly, you know, watching and looking, and I've made rescues here personally. And so it troubles me. In my tenure, you know, I've seen about 48 fatalities in the ocean, and I can't stop it all. You know, it bothers me personally. I mean, as far as the community and our city and stuff like that, yeah, they're aware as well. But again, the best we can do is try to mitigate any hazards and dangers and do the best that we can to manage it and just, you know, get on with it. Because otherwise, you know, sit around and think about, you know, what you can't handle, what you can't control. You just gotta do the best that you can.
What goes through your mind, just out of curiosity, when that dreaded moment comes, when someone is in trouble and they need your help and you realize, well, this is real, and you have to go out and save somebody? Like, do you recall, like, what, I'm sure it's adrenaline, but I'm sure you're just going off of action. Like, what's that like?
Well, I like to refer to lifeguarding as about, you know, 80% boredom, sitting around watching, and then you got the 20% is just pure adrenaline. And when it happens, it happens. You don't really have a whole lot of time to think. But what I think, if I'm on duty and I'm going on a rescue, the first thing that always pops in my mind, this has happened time and time again, is what did I miss? Because if you're going on a rescue, something fell through the cracks. You know, or again, let's go back to what I was saying about being preventative. Lifeguards are a unique group of public safety. The police have to respond to an alarm after a fire. The law enforcement has to respond to an alarm or a call after something's happened. We have a very unique advantage where we can sit here and stop people from getting into trouble. So if I'm going on a rescue and I'm on duty, yeah, I'm like, wow, I'm thinking right away, like, what did I miss? And then I go into mode of, you know, instincts and training to get that person out of the water and as quickly and as safely as I can. And hopefully I'm not having to do CPR and go into that measure and have a fatality. So there's a lot of things that happen that it's hard to explain. You just kind of reactionary. The training kicks in. But like I said, I know that from time to time when I've been there and I see something go down, I'm like, wow, what did I miss? And that's on me. You know, so I carry that burden.
We're getting down to the end of our questions here, Wyatt, and we appreciate you taking the time. I know you mentioned a number of fatalities, unfortunately, that you've had to deal with. What about saves? Do you keep track of how many people you've been able to pull out?
Oh, that's joy. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, you know what? I lost count at one point as far as it's kind of unique, because like if I go out and I stop you from getting into a rip current and nothing happened, technically we put that down as an assist. Those are way up there. But the ones that really strike true to my heart are, you know, the first one that I ever laid my hands on and did CPR, Terry Nix. He owned a pest control business. It was about 1995 or something, 97, I'm not sure. I had to do CPR, and he's alive today to see his grandchildren, and his family's very close to me. We actually have had gatherings with them. Never forget that first one. And I guess, you know, with actually doing CPR and seeing a person at some point unconscious and then getting back up and stabilized, I've only had about three of those. And I remember them, because usually if you're having to get into the mode, we're doing CPR, you know, the chances of bringing them back is are rare. Having three in my is pretty good. That's a high number because a lot of them don't make it. We have to do CPR. But yeah, it's really a wonderful feeling to be able to contribute to keeping people safe.
That being said, whether it's Cocoa Beach, Florida, or you know, a small community pool in small town America, how important is the work you guys do?
Oh, it very important. We do, you know, we're underrated. You know, sometimes people just think, hey, you know, they come, they don't even notice that you're there. We're kind of the silent watchdogs. We're very proud of what we do. But, you know, the most important thing is, you know, make our job easier, America. And that is find out, do your research when you're going to an area, where are those lifeguards and swim near those lifeguards. You know, we got people that come to this beach, you know, I'm tempted to ask them almost every day, and I have asked people, what made you guys choose this beach? Do you guys know there's no lifeguard? Do you know where the lifeguard is? And a lot of times they go, no, it just looked like a good place to come. So do your homework, you know, make our job easier. If you're swimming near a lifeguard, it's a 1 in 18 million chance of drowning. So you have a lot better odds of swimming in front of a lifeguard.
Wyatt, before we let you go, anything else you'd like to add? Any other advice for swimmers as we approach the summer months?
Yeah, I got off a little checkoff that we have, and let's start right at the top. Swim near a lifeguard. Another one is assign a water watcher. That would be a competent person who can not be distracted, and that person's assigned when you go to a beach with your group to watch everyone, if you will, even the children, most importantly, put life jackets on the small ones that don't know how to swim, and just be vigilant. Even in front of a lifeguard, we want that because, you know, the lifeguards get busy and you know, you might have to make an assist while they're doing a rescue of some sort. So water watcher is very important. Hydrate before you go to the beach. It's important to get that water. I usually drink about a gallon of water the night before I go to the beach the next day to work. Also the same kind of thing with sunblock. Put the sunblock on before you get to the beach that day when you get ready. And then most importantly, reapply that sunblock throughout the day because you're going to get wet. You're going to dry it off. Also be very aware of how hot sand can get. Wear sandals, footwear. The beach that I'm on right now is about a 50-yard dash from the water to get to the boardwalk. So we see second and third degree burns come across this and people get caught because they can't run fast enough to outrun that hot sand.
I believe it
gets up over 100 degrees. So we also have another thing we like to add in there. Get educated, learn to swim. That's another one. We want people to learn to
That's
swim.
That's important.
That's a big one.
That's very important. You know, I mean, if we could go back, if I could go back in time or even go and get things changed going forward, I would mandate swimming all across America at some degree. You know, kids need to learn how to swim.
It sounds like what you're looking for young men and women who are, must be like very mature, like more mature in years than they are in age. But it seems like they're well worth the wait. But I think that's the mission right now is it's kind of almost like a call to arms. We need like more kids to step up and in a sense, like fill the role, like as an adult to oversee and protect everybody else that's in their care. So no, I wish you the best of luck in that.
Yeah. Tell America, you know, we want you, we need good swimmers, strong swimmers, a job that you'll enjoy for the rest of your life. Or all, you know, Ronald Reagan was a lifeguard, and he has said that the most enjoyable time in his career was being a lifeguard. So you'll never forget it. We want you.
Wyatt Werneth, American Lifeguard Association National Spokesperson. We appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
WBTV's Good Question is a product of WBTV in cooperation with Queen City Podcast Network and Balto Creative Media. From WBTV, Good Question is produced by Jack Vandertal. Special thanks to Jamie Bull. For the Queen City Podcast Network, WBTV's Good Question is produced by Brian Baltashevitz and Maria Delgado. Production coordinator, Taylor Robinson. It is recorded at the Queen City Podcast Network studios at Huga Coworking in Charlotte, North Carolina.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.